Good morning to everybody. Good to see you on this, at least here in the Bay Area. It's a bright and sunny morning, kind of nice after a lot of rain. So expectations. Some of you might remember about 10 years ago at San Francisco Peninsula, we had a program called P2P. P2P means prepare to preach. It was part of a worldwide preaching campaign. It was the first week was a class on classes on outreach for the whole week for a bunch of young people all around the world. And it was followed by three separate major outreach efforts across Northern California, Ukiah, Sacramento, SFP. I came to it. In fact, it might have been one of the first times I ever came to the SFP hall. It might have been the very first time, along with, like I said, young Christadelphians from across the United States and, in fact, across the world. It was funny. I'm just thinking about it now. It's the first time I met a Dawson Bowman because Naomi's aunt, Hannah Dawson Bowman, came there as well, long before I ever met Naomi or her dad or any of the others. So like I said, we had a week of training. And after all that training, I went back to Sacramento to help organize our part of the event, along with a group of the other young people from Michigan and Missouri and from all over. And we had decided to do a community event. Basically, we did all sorts of events throughout the week, and it culminated in inviting people to the hall at the end of the week for classes and food and fellowship. And it was a huge success. We had over 100 community members come to the event at the end of the week, you know, to an ecclesia of about 20 people at the time when we did our lecture. And we felt like we were on top of the world. It was one of those things where you felt like God had called you to do something and to do this event, and a whole lot of work was put into it. And it felt like we were seeing some of the fruits of that effort. God had shown us his power and what he could do. And I think that made it all the more disappointing when in the following weeks and months, we began to realize that not a single person of those hundreds, over 100 people that showed up to the hall would ever actually be interested in what we had to say. And I think I felt a little depressed, and many of us who were involved felt a little depressed after that. We had tried so hard, but in the end, it kind of felt like it had all been for nothing. Expectations are funny things. They can be beautiful, especially when we put our hope in God. And sometimes he comes through when things seem absolutely impossible, when we feel like we're at the end of our rope, things just happen in our lives that are miracles. And we can see the power of God so clearly when that happens. On the other side of the coin, sometimes it feels very painful when it feels like God isn't coming through. And in particularly hard times, sometimes it can almost feel like a betrayal. And it can feel very painful. And it wasn't any different for the great men and women of faith in the Bible. The reason I had us read 1 Kings 18 is because I wanted to take a look at Elijah today. Because he has this very distinct moment of disappointment in himself, in God, that we can see. And I think it's very instructive to see how God handles it. And very instructive to us on for our own expectations and disappointment. In order to really understand the depth of Elijah's disillusionment and where all of this disappointment is coming from, we have to go back a little bit. In fact, we're going back to the chapter before we read 1 Kings 17, just a little bit, and we get a very important statement about Elijah. If you're an English teacher, you might call this a topic sentence. It's a signpost which you can understand everything about Elijah's mental state that happens afterwards. And it's kind of a deceptively simple statement. Here it is. This is from 1 Kings 17:1. Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gaul said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word." It's the very first time in the Bible we ever hear about Elijah. And it tells you vital information. Like, yes, it tells you his name and where he's from, but that's actually not the most important part about this statement. Because what we see here is Elijah's mission, his raison d'etre, That's a word I just learned from Merrill last night. I had to Google it, but that means reason for being. So that is his reason for being. His entire reason is summed up there. There, God has tells Elijah, there is going to be a massive drought in Israel, neither dew nor rain. And this is your job to communicate this, and something big is going to happen. It's in this context that we can further understand our reading this morning out of 1 Kings 18, perhaps the apex of Elijah's life as a prophet. So we just read that. And I think what's interesting is when we're looking at what happens in the course of this chapter, we see this magnificent show of power by God. And I think that's often what we focus on, is the fire coming down from heaven and all the prophets of Baal being butchered. But actually, I think if you're looking closely, going all the way back to the beginning of Elijah and through here, what Elijah's actually emphasis to him, the most important part about this chapter, what he would read as the most important, is the second part of that chapter. It's about the rain. That's why he sends his servant to go seven times. He's waiting for that rain. Because as big and powerful as everything that had happened that day was to Elijah, what really justified Elijah's existence as a prophet from the very beginning was that drought in Israel. Elijah is literally so excited about the rain that he eventually sees, he runs at super speed to see the king's reaction. And it's at exactly this point where Elijah's disappointment starts. And it's actually kind of weird if you look at it. At least for me, when you initially read 1 Kings 19, the very first few verses of it, it's strange because it doesn't seem like a whole lot has changed about Elijah's life. I'll read it in a second, but basically Jezebel threatens Elijah's life, but that's kind of par for the course for Elijah. So I'll read it. This is 1 Kings 19, 1 through 3. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done, how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. So again, if you read this at first, you might wonder, like, why is this any different for Elijah? Jezebel threatened to kill Elijah. Ahab threatened to kill Elijah. We see previously that this happens a ton. This is no different from any other point in Elijah's life. So why now is he so disappointed? What's changed? And I find the translation here actually interesting. Because if you guys are reading 1 Kings 19, verse 3, depending on your version of the Bible, it'll say a different thing. If you are reading out of the King James Version or the New King James Version, it will say not Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. It'll say Elijah saw and ran for his life. That's because the literal Hebrew word there is not afraid. It's to see. It's the word for perception. And Hebrew does have a word for afraid. Like, it uses it a ton of times. It's yare. To be afraid for your life, there is a... But the author did not choose that word for afraid. He chose to see. The reason it's translated like that is because the people who translated it saw he ran for his life. And so Elijah saw and ran for his life because Elijah was afraid, because he saw something that made him afraid. But what is interesting to me is, why did they choose that word? Why did they choose the word for he saw and not just he was afraid? It's because, to me, I think it's a clue of what Elijah is afraid of. He's not just afraid of his life or getting killed. He could have been afraid a million times of being killed in the past years that he's been doing this. He's afraid because he perceives something particular has changed in this message from Jezebel. What I think that Elijah perceives in this moment is, at this very moment he gets this message, is that he will never ever in his life convince Israel and Ahab to change from their ways. I think Elijah, for the first time, has given it all. He has completed what he sees as his life journey from the very beginning, his life purpose, and it didn't work. No one has changed. He's still on the run for his life. The way he sees it, he's the only person faithful to God, and nothing has changed. Looking at Elijah and everything about him leading up to this point, you know, he doesn't seem to be a man afraid of death. He literally immediately after this goes out to the desert and asks to die. No, what I see is not a man afraid of death, but a man who is terrified, perhaps for the first time, that everything that he has done, all of his sacrifice, has been for nothing. He, like many who follow the Lord, has sacrificed everything to deliver the word of God. And yet here he is again, alone and afraid and on the run. Discouragement is unfortunately part and parcel of being a believer. We're asked to expect things of God. In fact, we're told we must have hope in God. And sometimes, like Elijah, we're on the hilltop, we are triumphant, we feel God's power working in and through us, and we can feel ourselves influencing those around us with God's compassion and truth. And sometimes we spend a whole lot of time and effort, and you pour yourself into something and no one shows up. Or maybe it's with our relationships, a brother and sister that we rely on lets us down, or a prayer that we ask from the depths of our soul, we cry out, and that prayer is just not answered the way we want it to be answered. And how often do we do what Elijah does exactly right here? We run away. Maybe not physically. I don't go out to the desert and ask to die, but we certainly run away mentally, spiritually. We isolate ourselves from God. Being disappointed or upset with God, as we can see with Elijah, isn't something that's mutually exclusive from having faith in him. We can still love God and have faith, just as Elijah does, and feel hurt and disappointed. Just as anyone who is close to us can hurt us. In fact, the closer they are to us, the more they can hurt us. God can hurt us as well. Or we can at least feel like he's done something to hurt us. So this is what Elijah does. He runs. He's exhausted. He's at the end of his rope. He can't take anything anymore. And it's such a relatable and human reaction to what's happened to him, this disappointment. And I think it really makes it easy to kind of understand him as a person. And it's easy to, I think, look at Elijah as short-sighted or ungrateful or without faith at this moment, like this is a very low moment in his life, which it is. But look at how God responds to Elijah right here. I think through God's response, we can just see God's grace and compassion and mercy and just how gentle God is with us. So I'll read from 1 Kings 19, 5 through 8. Then Elijah lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked in a hot oven on hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and he drank. And strengthened by that food, he traveled for 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. Sometimes when I read this, I get emotional at just the tenderness with which God treats this man who is clearly deeply hurting. He sends an angel to Elijah and he brings food, a cake baked on hot stones, and brings water. And he says, "Eat this." I love all the little details about this angel. Both times when the angel comes, it specifically mentions that the angel touches Elijah, as if to show how gentle God is being with him right now and that importance of a touch to someone who's hurting. And how wonderful of an exhortation is this about how we treat our brothers and sisters who are in pain, spiritually hurting. Whether it be disappointment, sometimes we feel hurt, or depression, trauma, mental health, so many things, especially right now, that are going on. How many of our brethren must be feeling a little bit like Elijah right now underneath? And look how this angel treats him. He's just by being there for Elijah, just by his presence, he acknowledges Elijah's hurt. He doesn't try to fix Elijah's hurt. He doesn't say, "Elijah, get up, you know, you just got to get on with it. He doesn't tell Elijah, you should really be having a little bit more faith right now. He doesn't act falsely positive, like things are going to be okay. He takes care of him. He feeds Elijah. The angel gives him a touch of encouragement. He doesn't leave after the first day. He comes back. He doesn't say, well, I came to give you your cake and now that's done. And he continues to care for Elijah until he is well enough to get on his feet. And he very gently directs him towards God and God's comfort. God continues to treat Elijah with the utmost care when he does get to the cave. Not accusing him, God asks Elijah the simple question, what are you doing here? One thing I find very interesting about this is we see the exact same conversation repeating twice. It's one of those Bible echo things. It's always something to pay attention to whenever you see in the Bible something repeated twice. And that's what you see here. The Lord asks Elijah twice what he's doing there, and twice Elijah answers this. I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to the death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. This conversation, repeated over and over again, it sounds very familiar to me, personally. To me, it's that twinge of conscience, that small voice in your head when you're far away from God, and when you are maybe not doing the right thing, when you have been running away from God spiritually, that asks you very simply, what are you doing here? And often, if you're like me, I tell that voice, no, I know what I'm talking about. Here are all the reasons I should be running away. Here are all the reasons things should be bad. Here are the reasons I need to hide from you and hide from God and hide from everything else. And yet that voice persists again and again, quiet but clear. What are you doing here? And so often we have these lies in our head, and that's what they are, lies, and they're strong. They come like a hurricane, an earthquake, or a fire. They tell us all sorts of things, and they reinforce our fears and doubts. Can you hear the lies in what Elijah just said? I tried, Elijah says, so hard. I tried with everything I had. I trusted in you, and I failed, and now I'm alone. I am not enough. And what's so insidious about these lies, like any good lie, is there's a lot of truth in it. Because Elijah is not enough. That's the truth. He was never going to be enough. What the lie in that statement was that Elijah did not fail. Listen to God's answer to Elijah's list of complaints. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore at the mountain and broke in pieces the rock before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in the cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Elijah didn't fail because his mission was not to save Israel. He had the wrong expectation. And as much as he clearly believed it, Elijah's mission was not to bring about the winds of change or shake the corrupt foundations of Israel's establishment or cleanse Israel with God's holy fire. I think in this metaphor by God, Elijah himself is the still small voice. Because Elijah thinks he's all those other things. He thinks he's the fire and the earthquake and the wind. And he expects that his great sacrifice is for God to change Israel and Ahab. But God says to him, even if you had done even greater things with my spirit and my power, I would not be in those things. God is telling Elijah, God says to Elijah, Elijah, you are exactly what I needed you to be. Which in this case wasn't something that changed everything. It wasn't something that shook the foundations of Israel. It was a voice crying in the wilderness, calling for Israel to make straight the way of the Lord. It's an exhortation for each of us because I think it's so easy and natural for us to take these heavy burdens upon our own shoulders. We take these things that are way too heavy for us, far too heavy, and put expectations much too large on shoulders far too small. It's funny thinking back to the failed preaching experience I had in P2P 10 years ago. Because as I was writing this, I realized something funny. Literally, as I was writing this, something clicked, and I realized that this wasn't a failure. There's no way of knowing all the many reasons God does the things he does. Our current VBS, for instance, is a result of that same preaching effort, started 10 years ago. That was the San Francisco crew. That's what they did. That in and of itself is huge. But even beyond this, as I was writing this, I literally just remembered something else I had forgotten. That 10 years ago, the very next week, I was baptized, in large part because of the encouragement I felt from that failed preaching effort. At least to me, that failure changed my life. Often the burdens and expectations that we take upon ourselves aren't ours to take. Moving mountains and changing hearts and even changing our own hearts much of the time, that's up to God. And it's very hard for us to wait for that and for us to see, because we have our own expectations and wants from things. Sometimes our love to God grows weak, our love to man grows weak, and we get discouraged and we feel down. So with the emblems we take this morning, we are reminded where to go when we feel that discouragement. With these emblems, we are reminded of that angel that ministered to Elijah and the care and tenderness God holds for those of us that suffer. We are reminded that Jesus came to all who are weary and burdened, that Jesus came to all those who are chained by sin and loneliness and uncertainty and the cares of this world and said, I will give you rest. That Jesus gave his life so that we may live ours without the weight of the world and expectations on our shoulders. We're reminded that there is joy and victory and triumph over all those things that wait for us, and that endure. And we are reminded that after all of this, God gives Elijah a vision. It's a vision of justice, of righteousness remaining in Israel despite everything, and most of all, of hope. You have done what I asked of you, my good and faithful servant, God seems to be saying to Elijah, and I will do the rest. God asks of us the same thing, to be the small voice, to bring what you can today. And God says, I will give you a future that cannot be moved and cannot be shaken.